We've got Connor Boyack with us. Connor, are you there?
I am, Jake. How you doing?
Doing good. What's going on today, man?
Well, you know, as much as I dislike talking about presidential politics, I kind of feel the need to.
It's okay, you know, man. My blood pressure was through the roof on this dummy. I don't like to be rude and use ad hominem attacks, but sometimes it's just more efficient.
Well, it's the Princess Bride quote. You know, you keep on saying that word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel the need to interject when people are making claims that simply are not true. I've long maintained, you know, of course, Mitt Romney is the presumptive nominee. The convention's coming up in a couple of weeks. It's assumed that things will go as the Republican National Committee has certainly been orchestrating and helping Romney, you know, for months, even though he isn't the actual nominated candidate. So assuming that he is going to receive the party's nomination and then now he's got Paul Ryan, I've long made clear, you know, publicly here on your radio show and elsewhere, that my political disdain for Mitt Romney, you know, and I always qualify that. I'm sure he's a great guy. You know, this isn't about him. But
yeah, it's like how I feel about Jason Chaffetz. I'd probably love to go play golf with Jason Chaffetz. I want him out of office yesterday, though.
Right. The question here is the ideas. It's the policies being voted on, the policies they're saying they would vote on. So you know, that's all kind of said and done, and the record stands, and the words that have been said and the positions that have been made. The thing that I want to talk about today is in specific regards to Paul Ryan. Of course, he's the newly declared vice presidential potentially nominated candidate, you know, when Romney gets it. Nothing's for sure yet. But Mitt Romney's brought him on as that if he gets the nomination, Paul Ryan will be there as his vice presidential candidate. So, of course, the conservative base just goes wild because, from my view, he was the better pick of the names that were being floated, like your Tim Pawlenty and your Condi Rice and your Marco Rubio. I think out of all those kind of candidates for the vice presidential pick, that the smart pick was, in fact, Paul Ryan. I think if you're saying, well, we have to choose out of these five or eight or however many it was, Paul was the better pick. But I think we need to temper that enthusiasm.
A better pick for what, though, in terms of Romney actually getting elected? Not
correct.
Because his policies have any kind of semblance to give a crap for liberty.
Well, and that's the point that I want to talk about, is that it's perplexing to me to see many, not clearly not all, but many in the libertarian community, broadly speaking, who are, if not excited and supportive about this, they are at least hopeful and encouraged.
Well,
and
Connor, you must be talking to a completely different libertarian community than me, because they want to barf like I do. Like, seriously have vomit in my mouth right now.
No, but so listen to this, right? I read an article the other day, in fact, I think it was posted just yesterday, on BuzzFeed, and David Boaz, who's the executive vice president.
I've met David Boaz. I've had dinner with him back in the late 90s.
So these are kind of the beltway libertarians, as we like to call them. They're not really libertarian, although in the public's eye, they are a reflection of and spokesman for libertarianism, so they have to be responded to. In this case, with Paul Ryan, I guess Boaz is how you pronounce his last name?
David Boaz.
David Boaz, his quote was as follows: Paul Ryan is going to be very attractive to the broad libertarian voters. He has obviously talked more than anybody else in Washington about getting control of the budget and spending. Now I sit there and I think, really? He's talked more than anyone else in Washington about actually substantively getting control of the budget and spending? So that becomes kind of the focal point on which we judge whether Paul Ryan, at least fiscally, right, we can leave the social stuff behind, the foreign policy for a moment. Let's talk just about fiscally. Is it true, in fact, that Paul Ryan's fiscal positions are a reflection about a libertarian type of position? What a libertarian would do fiscally in office, is that what Paul Ryan is doing? Of course, many...
Now, hold on, Connor. I've actually got a clip for you.
Sure,
I did some homework for you. Hold on. You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
There you go. Sorry, I just had to interrupt. I actually Googled that for you.
That definitely enhances what we're talking about. No, so David Boaz goes on to say, you know, Paul Ryan is, quote, well-educated in the free market libertarian point of view. Now, of course, he was widely criticized and praised on both sides of the false left-right political spectrum for saying that he was kind of a disciple, self-proclaimed disciple of Ayn Rand, right, that he had read...
Yeah, but we already fell for that with Alan Greenspan.
Right.
Right?
certainly.
Like, how dumb does he think we are? Like, Alan Greenspan was just like 3 years ago.
Well, and simply reading a book does not make you a disciple. You need to have actions that match the rhetoric. And so, but here you have David Bowes, right? He's kind of a high-ranking executive of a very prominent libertarian-ish institution, saying that, well, Paul Ryan is a good reflection. So let's pause on that for a moment and say, well, is that in fact true? Of course, Paul Ryan's claim to fame is this budget that he proposed last April, almost a year and a half ago, called the Path to Prosperity. It was kind of an alternative budget that was proposed in regards to a 10-year budget that Obama had proposed. So, of course, here we are looking at this budget proposal by President Obama, staggering debt, $46 trillion over the next 10 decades for the budget, right? $46 trillion over 10 years. That is just a staggering amount. So you say, well, okay, what is the alternative being proposed? What in fact was Paul Ryan doing that was kind of your Ayn Randish, libertarian, free market leaning proposal, alternative proposal to that staggering sum? This is the benchmark that we determine if Paul Ryan is in fact a fiscal hawk or not, if he is at all liberty minded fiscally. And of course, well, what did his budget do? His budget was claimed for cutting People were widely touting his budget plan, this Path to Prosperity, for as one article said, for cutting $6 trillion in spending over the next 10 years. And you say, well, that's awesome. You know, cutting $6 trillion in spending, that means we're closing or substantially reducing departments, we're hacking at the branches of government left and right, trying to downsize. $6 trillion is a pretty good sum. But then you look into it a little bit more deeply than the media at the time and since was reporting. These were not, in fact, $6 trillion in cuts over the next 10 years. It was a reduction in contrast to Obama's proposal, whereas Obama was proposing $46 trillion in additional in total budget, which requires substantial increases in spending over the next 10 years. Paul Ryan was proposing only $40 trillion. So it was still a staggering increase, even relative to where we are at now or last April when he proposed it. It is still a huge increase. What Paul Ryan was instead proposing was simply slowing down ever so slightly the acceleration in growth of the federal government. It was not a cut. It was not...
The exact argument that Hayek makes in his essay, Why I'm Not a Conservative, that conservatives don't do anything. They're just slowly getting to the same crappy place that the progressives are getting to.
And this is exactly the point you're making, Jake, is what makes it so troubling for me to claim that a simple reduction in an overwhelming increase in spending is somehow a free market position to take. This is the problem, as I've said many times before, with conservatism. And as you just note that Hayek said, it's relative. It's less taxes, it's less government, it's more freedom. But as that shifts, as Obama says, oh man, we're just going to totally increase the size of government, the conservative, supposed conservative position is a relative one that says, oh, we'll actually decrease it by this percentage point, but they're still accepting and certainly not strongly opposing the substantial increase relative to even where we're at now, let alone where we should be and where we once were at even decades ago. So for David Bowes and other people like him, you know, even Matt Kibbe, or I don't remember how you pronounce his last name, the president of FreedomWorks, right? There, lots of libertarians work there, though they're generally billed as a conservative organization, kind of a front for the Tea Party. Matt Kibbe's been widely touting Paul Ryan as this great pick. He says,
yeah,
Romney...
This is the whole premise of Teocon, right? And I named the Beltway libertarians, in particular the Koch money, which runs deep in both FreedomWorks and the Cato Institute.
It does.
And the problem is, and this is the same, I think, that we find with anybody, even a guy as badass as Ron Paul, nobody's perfect. And so I look at the Cato Institute. Yeah, Paul Ryan is a disaster. I mean, sure, maybe he's at least trying to reduce spending somehow. I don't know. His whole scheme is jacked. But voting for TARP, voting for the Patriot Act, how can you even use the word libertarian in the same sentence?
That's exactly right.
All right, let's come back after the break. I think you're really nailing this. You're getting my blood boiling again, Connor. Come on back, talking about presidential politics. K-Talk, the voice of Utah. Come on back, guys. All right, guys, welcome back. In the middle of the Boyack Review here, Mental Self-Defense Radio. I'm Jake Shannon, and we've got Connor. He's got a problem, as evidenced in The Princess Bride.
Inconceivable. You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
All right, Connor, are you there?
I am. It is inconceivable.
So Paul Ryan, libertarian. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
No, you know, and we have an identity problem in the libertarian movement, and I think those who are very kind of deep in the trenches recognize this. On the one hand, kind of, you know, conservatives think that we're all atheist, pot-smoking, you know, selfish, self-absorbed individuals, Ayn Rand, you know, disciples. And clearly there are some in our fold who maybe meet all that criteria.
Yeah, certainly. There are people that live up to that cliche.
And so we get labeled that way on the so-called right, the conservatives. And then on the left, you know, people look at this Paul Ryan who's threatening Medicare and this crazy libertarian that's, you know, now on the Romney ticket. And so we're billed as somehow being basically conservatives, right, by people on the left who look at a conservative like Paul Ryan and say that it's very libertarian to do what he's doing when all he's really known for, really, what people proclaim him as this just fiscal hawk for, is a simple reduction in future increases in the budget. And that's certainly not libertarian. So we have an identity problem. We have a messaging problem. For people to even use that label and bandy it about so carelessly, I think that's a problem that we need to address, and that's probably more our fault than it is their fault. We need to make it known that, no, that is, in fact, not a libertarian position. To further this point, Wayne Allen Root...
Don't get me started on Wayne Allen Root.
Wayne Allen Root, who, you know, he's been a vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party. He's the current head of, like, the Libertarian National Committee or chairman. He's been writing all these articles on townhall.com, a very conservative website, praising Romney, praising Paul Ryan, saying how good it is, and he's basically taken an anti-Obama position, and therefore, in how he addresses these articles, it's really a pro-Romney, pro-Paul Ryan position, and he's giving them strategy advice, and here's what I've learned, here's what you need to do. And so here you have a very prominent libertarian, a guy in his byline who says like five times that he's, you know, a libertarian or involved with the Libertarian Party, and here you have him widely touting Paul Ryan as just this intelligent pick. And so even like I say, we have a messaging problem, because even those who are trying to carry this message forward are causing us harm.
No, this is, look, you're nailing why I wrote Teocond, because we are being infiltrated. The true libertarians, they're trying to distort the message, and it happens everywhere. Yes, like I mean, I can't even believe that Wayne Allen Root got the vice presidential nomination, but same with our presidential candidate last time. It was a complete joke.
Sure.
I mean, complete joke. But this happens at every... I mean, look, Ron Paul has his Jesse Benton. I'm sorry, I'm just going to call it out. He's got... who's that other guy, that neocon that he brought in on foreign policy?
Shell, I don't remember. I know who you're talking about.
So there's these... This is a very serious problem. It's the neocon / socialists, because neocons are socialists, just they've already infiltrated the right and are using that rhetoric. They infiltrate, and they try to jack up the message and mess it up for us. And that you're right. It's like it's in every single organization.
And especially as we see the Ron Paul presidential campaign winding down with, you know, the help of Jesse Benton saying that we all need to be civil and respectful and kind on the floor of the National Convention and not cause anyone any heartburn. So, you know, even as that presidential campaign meets its demise, whether you want to say that it's too early or being handled in the wrong way, as you say, there are people who are trying to jump on that and distort the message and distort the implications of what that campaign was. People are saying, well, this Paul Ryan pick is going to bring in a lot of the Ron Paul flock because they see someone who's serious about the budget, serious about spending. But what you don't understand, what these people don't understand or purposefully distort or try to suppress, is the fact that, yes, Ron Paul was tough on spending. He was far, 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 far tougher than Romney or Paul Ryan are getting anywhere close to. But why and how was he tough on spending? It was because he recognized some of the things that we are spending money on. We can spend money in the short term differently and then phase it out in the long term, specifically the foreign policy. So when you look at Paul Ryan's budget proposal, this mythical path to prosperity that he launched last April, it does not even touch at all, not one cent, the military-industrial complex, the Department of Defense, the sacred cow, right, the defense spending for the conservative. This budget, the Pentagon's base budget, we're not even talking about all the extra stuff they spend money on, just their base budget has nearly doubled in the past 10 years. right? And then you look at all the other military interventions and the money that we're spending money on for quote-unquote defense. The total amount spent on the military per year is roughly $700 billion. So here we have, you know, people saying, well, yeah, Paul Ryan's cutting $6 trillion when in fact it's just a slight reduction. That amount alone adds up to $6.5 trillion. I'm again referring to the military spending that we're doing. $6.5 trillion projected spending over the next decade. You would think that an individual who's truly serious about this country's fiscal health would tackle the highly weaponized elephant in the room, right? And he doesn't. And it's because he's not, in fact, serious about the problem. He is not bringing solutions to the table, unlike Ron Paul. And yet you have people in the media saying that, just looking at the very superficial stuff and saying, well, Paul Ryan's serious about the budget, and that must be attractive to the Ron Paul folks. It's not, because there's so much underlying context of how those budget numbers were derived. And it was primarily because of scaling back our foreign adventurism. It was because where Ron Paul was proposing to cut five entire departments and phase out all these programs. You cannot propose to have any serious discussion about the fiscal health of the United States of America without addressing the need for deep, deep cuts.
Yeah, but Connor, the word serious, when used by the mainstream media or by politicos, is code word for acceptable for the establishment and the status quo. That's what serious means. This is the same status quo that has buried us in debt. I mean, I've looked at Ryan's... He's a dummy. I mean, I'm sorry. It doesn't even... I'm not even using anything I even used in, that I learned in grad school as a financial engineer. You can go to the Federal Reserve's website, look at their data, and study two simple stats on a graph. The federal government current receipts, and then graph that against the total credit market debt owed, okay? Mm-hmm. We're talking at $60, $70 trillion of debt, and his tax receipts like would do nothing against that. Like, right. Literally, it's like a flat line versus this exponentially raising curve. There's nothing that it would do. And he talks about cutting taxes. He's talking about cutting corporate taxes, not income taxes in any real way. 75% of federal spending is mandated by law.
Yep.
He can't do anything about that.
And it's, you know, this really gets to the underlying problem that we're talking about. And to even step it back even further, when these kind of prominent names were being floated of potential vice president picks for Mitt Romney, there was a lot of discussion of, well, what happens if he picks, like, Rand Paul, right? And sidestepping the fact that Rand Paul kind of, you know, crossed himself and has a lot of, you know, enemies or people who are disgruntled with him, I should better say, within the libertarian community.
Yeah, that's different. Like, both Mike Lee and Rand Paul, I spank them all the time on this show, but that's almost because it's like, you know, when your own brother or, like, a parent is a bonehead, you can pick on them, but if anybody else picks on them, I will help them. You know what I mean?
No, and you know, there's some fair and legitimate points, even which I've made, that Rand Paul has done some anti-liberty things, but he's done so much for the liberty movement in the Senate. So even sidestepping his problem, let's say that he was like even a Ron Paul or even better. So let's say, well, Mitt Romney's considering picking him. The discussion was, is that going to bring Mitt Romney more votes? Is he going to attract the libertarian community? And even then, there were a lot of people who were saying, well, no, not really. You know, I wouldn't vote for Mitt Romney even if Rand Paul was there. He'd just be silenced. He wouldn't have a voice. Romney wouldn't listen to him, yada, yada, yada. And so now to even hear that discussion being just even brought up, let alone entertained with Paul Ryan, is mind-boggling to me. I want to just rattle off really quick a list of some of the notable votes that Paul Ryan has made that make clear, at least in my mind, that he's nowhere near libertarian. You mentioned a few of them, you know, on foreign policy, for example, that he authorized military force in Iraq in 2002. He voted for a bunch of emergency spending money for war in Iraq and Afghanistan. He voted yes on declaring Iraq part of the war on terror with no exit date at all. He voted against getting troops out of Iraq with a 90-day deployment. He voted for the Patriot Act. He voted for allowing electronic surveillance without a warrant. He voted for No Child Left Behind and the Head Start Act and TARP. I mean, you know, the TARP video has been making a lot of rounds in the past couple of days, and it's hilarious. Here he is sitting on the floor of the House and saying, this goes against my principles. This is repugnant to my principles, but we need to pass it so that I can stand by my principles, or something to that effect.
So Orwellian.
It is, and it's what, right, of course, I brought up the point on Facebook. This is exactly what George W. Bush said. He said that I'm abandoning the free market to save the free market. And so that is not libertarian at all. It's not even close to libertarian. Even when you talk about financial stuff.
Wait, I mean, let's just play Mad Libs just for a second here. Let's take out free market and put, like, life, okay? I'm abandoning life to save my life. Like, it's dumb.
I'm abandoning morality to promote morality, right?
Like, it's ridiculous.
It doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it's like I said at the outset of this segment, it is perplexing to me to see him getting as much praise as he is. And this isn't just like, oh, okay, well, this is who we're stuck with, so let's support him because we want Mitt Romney. There are a lot of people who are extremely excited about the Paul Ryan pack. Even people who I've seen on Facebook and elsewhere who were kind of disappointed a little bit with Romney. He's a little bit too moderate, but here's this highly conservative Paul Ryan. This just infuses the campaign with new energy. And whether you want to call that a kind of a libertarian-leaning energy or just conservative, for me, if this is the energy that they're in support of, which is just big government across the board, even fiscally and especially fiscally, I am extremely perplexed as to what metrics, what benchmark these people are using to determine who they support and why. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, if they're using the word libertarian to describe Paul Ryan, then the word loses completely all meaning.
Right.
It's like debasing the currency. It's like the value, the concept is stretched so thin to have no meaning at all.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose one of my bigger problems with what is happening here with Paul Ryan's proposal, even, and of course now the pundits are saying, well, Romney doesn't, he's supportive of the plan, but he's not going to just, you know, red letter, just put a stamp on it and pass it through. But this plan is just ridiculous. Ryan's goal with this path to prosperity was to bring spending back to pre-2008 levels. Right?
Yeah. It's basically such a radical.
Right. It's basically an anti-Obama budget, in part. I mean, barely, if you can even say that.
And meanwhile, the George Bush's spending and that Congress's spending had spent more than all prior, and he's cool with that.
Right, for which Paul Ryan himself was, you know, quite responsible, being in Congress and supporting so much of it. So this is not a path to prosperity. This is a myth. It's fictional. It's in no way based in reality to claim that a simple reduction in future spending, as you note, there are all these unfunded liabilities and the interest on the debt and all these things compounding, to claim that you're just shaving a little bit off of future increases and not even addressing the current interest on the debt, the current spending levels. It shows to me that the conservatives who support Paul Ryan because of his fiscal, you know, hawkishness and his conservative strength, you know, they don't have their eyes open. And I don't want to be insulting when I say that. I mean, these are smart people.
Look,
these are
Connor. You're nice. I think their head is where the sun doesn't shine. You're saying their eyes aren't open, man. It's got to smell where their head is. I mean, that far removed from reality?
It makes no sense. And I've tried to sit down, and I have, you know, I've had discussions with these people, and they make some points with which I certainly disagree, but it's like they're kind of smelling the onion from the outside that has all these kind of external layers on it, and you don't notice the pungent odor until you really peel back the layers. And these people aren't doing their due diligence. And I suspect, in part, it's because they know what they would find. Right?
Yeah.
They know what it would smell like if they kind of lift up the layers on the surface, and that scares them. The implications of that, because they know that they would have to reject this candidate, they would have to reject this campaign, they would have to support someone like a Ron Paul or a Gary Johnson or write-in Mickey Mouse. Anyone can be better than, you know, these two clowns.
Right.
And that scares them. It terrifies them, and so they don't do their homework.
It just, you know, it's almost like somebody who's smoking and realizes that it is going to kill them, and yet they still smoke. It's like the craziest thing in the world.
Yeah. So in the smoking case, it's an addiction, right? I mean, it's an underlying addiction. So what does that equate in this case? Do these people have an addiction, what, to ignorance, to complacency, to the status quo and the, you know, current comfort levels? And, of course, we see that. The way people vote, they want to support whoever will support their current income and way of living. We need to change that.
You're right. Hey, Connor, great segment, man. We'll catch you next Tuesday, the Boyack Review. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Stay tuned for Morgan Philpott's new show right here, K-Talk, Voice of Utah.